And it was actually surprisingly good, I thought.
Thank you.
Despite the fact that Jono was doing it.
Okay, welcome to Lug Radio Episode 6, live from the Linux User and Developer Expo 2004 in Olympia in London.
Absolutely.
And we're here as... we're here in the kind of cafe area, and we're sat at a table with a high-quality mixer and some...
And 75% of the Lug Radio team. We have Jono.
Yes, I'm here.
We have me, Ack, and we have Matt Lubeck.
Hello.
We've got one extra. Well, we've actually got two extra.
We've actually got two extras. We have Dan the Packmule.
Say hello, Dan.
Hi.
Dan is a guy from our lug, and he's come down. He's generously offered to carry all the stuff around all day.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for that, Dan. And Aquarian, guy I know anyway.
Hello.
He's got a cool website, Aquarionics.
Cool website, Aquarionics.com. Soon to be Istic?
No. I can cut that.
Nice one, right. Well, so what do you guys think so far of this fantastic little expo sort of thing?
Well, I'm not entirely sure why I spent 3 hours on a train. No, it's okay. Yeah, it's all right. I've had a beer for £3. I've seen some people with ridiculously long hair, considering their age. I've seen about 3 women all day and about 400 men. So, yeah. I mean, if you're into gay long hair, then that's fine.
I like gay long hair. I had gay long hair.
Is that long hair that's gay or hair that's, you know, gay and long?
You see, you always do this to me, right? You always kind of confuse me with your bizarre political.
Philosophy student.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Philosophy graduate is quite right.
Yeah, complete bellend. That's what it really means.
Off bellend. Right. My thoughts on the expo. We were at the Linux Expo 6 months ago, and this is actually bigger than that one was. It's still the same old faces. You've got IBM, you've got Sun, you've got Novel. You've got the .org village, which has got Debian in it, it's got KDE in it, it's got Mambo, and it's got Scriptus. Is it Scribus?
Scribus, yeah.
Which is the German... Is he German, the guy?
I think his name's...
He's fantastic.
He's pretty cool, yeah. And there's the other guy, I think he's from Liverpool, and he works in Scribus a lot as well.
Big failure to see Darla Bollock so far.
Yeah, they're not here. I was expecting Dinah Bollock to be here, but they're not.
No, very disappointing.
Cool.
But yeah, so you're feeling resentful about paying £3 for a pint, are you, Matt?
Hey, mate, it wasn't even a pint. It was 300 millilitres of Beck's, and I'm not a lager man as it is. But, it's going to be good. I mean, it's nice just to be able to be myself, you know. It's like I've come out of the closet, and now I'm amongst my own people, you know.
He's made 2 gay references now. Do you think he's trying to tell us something yet?
Look, I'm not trying to tell you anything. Dan, have you got anything to say about this?
Unlike you, I'm kind of enjoying it. It's nice to see the BBC here. No, they weren't here last year.
Sorry, I'm trying to attack Dan with the mic.
Shy Dan. Jono's standing up and walking around. He can take the mic out of the stand
like
and walk around.
Roving reporter.
Look at this.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about paying £3 for a pint of lager. I might not have told you this story, but the last time we came up...
Fuck off. You've been moaning about this for 6 bastard months. Shut up.
£7.50
Shut
for 2
up.
Less than points.
No one cares. Right, anyway. what do you think about the show so far, Quirin?
So far, I've just about seen Red Hat showing a video of waves. I'm not quite sure why, but I'm sure it's important. Waves.
Oh.
Waves?
Waves?
Well, you know, I suppose.
Like, sea waves.
Exciting, you know.
Fine.
We'll have to make sure we make a
special trip to see that.
To go and see the waves on the Red Hat.
See some Red Hat things. I mean, the BBC are here, which is quite cool. They're pimping some kind of open source video compression codec or something. Was it AAF or AAS?
There were some X's and some F's and some A's in it somewhere. Perhaps a V and an M. I'm not sure.
AAF. There's a poster bonus with BBC written on it.
I thought you were on about the AFFS.
I think that there's some damn thing called Matroska or something, which
what?
Is a video codec. And AAF is the thing that the iTunes store uses, I think. Apparently that's AAC. Everyone in the whole fucking expo has just shouted at me. All right, shut up. Shut up, all of you. Right, I'm going to hand over to Matt because he knows what I'm talking about and I don't.
I don't know what you're talking about, actually, but it is good that the BBC are getting involved in open source development, because a couple of shows ago we were talking about how, you know, we were talking about government money being spent on on basically massive firms who are producing closed source software. And I think it's good that our license money, if you don't, our license fee for television licenses is going towards something that's actually we can use. You know what I mean? Okay.
Makes a change, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hang on a sec. What?
So, did you see they got the Reith lectures on MP3 this year?
Have they? Yeah. I had heard that the BBC were going to start putting output in MP3 format. So, in a response to the iPod generation, is what they said.
iPod generation.
Yeah.
Sorry, Akka, you seem to be performing some kind of fellatio on a donkey. What are you trying to say?
Fucking iPod. Excellent. I'm in stereo. This is now once again we have the Axe show. Ah. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see the BBC here, especially since they wrote the My Doom virus we established a few weeks ago. But yeah, it is nice. They do seem to be slowly buying into the whole content. I get the impression that the techie guys at the lower levels have always bought into the concept, and they just repeatedly whined about it and shown that this kind of thing works until all the managers in suits are actually starting to listen, sending guys to this kind of thing.
You are listening to the Gladio.
Okay, hello. This is John. Someone's taking my picture. Hello.
Who the fuck are you? Hello.
Right.
Someone took a picture.
Nice one. Okay, well, I'm here with Jonathan Riddle, who's at the KD booth. A fantastic desktop environment, I'm sure we'll all agree. Shut up, you.
I didn't even say anything. I mean, myself, I happen to prefer another desktop environment, but that's why I'm making you interview Jonathan.
Right, John, how's it going?
It's going really well. We've had a really great day. We've got lots of busy people. We've got people who don't know anything about GNU Linux or free software or open source at all. And we've got people who want to know how to develop their own applications for KD.
Nice one. And has the take-up of 3.2 been pretty good?
It's been very good. We've had a lot of positive feedback from it. People saying more user-friendly, it's faster, great new applications. We've got people on 3.1 saying, I want to upgrade, please can I do that now? And it's been very popular.
Have you had any complaints, incidentally?
We haven't had a single complaint yet.
My God. Wait.
Can I be your first?
Just ignore him.
No. I'm not going to complain about KDE myself. I don't use it, but that's cool.
Hello, this is Justin Davis at the Linux Expo, and Jono Bacon is my god.
Okay, here we are, and we have Mr. Paul Sladen.
We're talking to Paul.
How's it going, Paul?
Good afternoon. It's going very well. Look at the crowds around here. They are massive. They are happening. Of course, Debian has the biggest stand. Debian's stand is about the size of the rest of the entire dock or village put together. Isn't that great?
I've heard that that's because of some kind of sort of illegal drug trafficking. Is that true?
I could do with a glass of water if anyone has one.
Obviously, as a representative of the Debian project, you couldn't possibly comment. Is that?
it's something like that, yes.
I knew it all along, you know. Debian is just all about pushing drugs and sort of whacking back the crack, you know. Is that true? Do you do crack?
We do crack. We do crack quality DVDs. Only £10. They're a bit cheaper than crack as well.
Fantastic recovery there, I've got to say.
If you can't afford the DVD, we have CDs at £2, and if you're a real cheapskate, there are case badges at £2 for £1. £2 for £1. That is a bargain.
My God, it's like David Dickinson on Bid Up TV. So, what have you got planned for this evening?
I seem to have a house in London at the moment, so I've got about half of the dock or village sleeping at my house, which is a really silly thing to let happen. So I'm not actually going to the party
orgy.
Tonight. Say that again?
Dot orgy, yeah. Is that what's going on?
The dot orgy village, fantastic.
Hey, we've even got some women, you know.
No, women at a Linux Expo? I've heard that you're a woman at a Linux Expo, is this true?
I'm afraid this is, yes. There are actually quite a few of us around. There's at least two of us. Three of us that I can see.
Right, this is, what's your name? Maria Blackmore, yes. From Gnome.
Yes, that's right.
So, tell me why Gnome is better than KDE.
Oh, you know, I shouldn't really do that. But we're better because we're cool, and we have a much better logo as well.
It doesn't look like a better logo to me. Sorry, there's just Gnome printed out on a piece of paper.
That's not very fair. They've got Gnome written on a piece of paper, and Jono's accusing them on that basis, which is a little bit unreasonable.
It's maybe a bit unfair, to be honest. But
Maria, what do you think about the new 2.6 release?
I think it's very exciting. It should be pretty interesting once it starts getting into more of the mainstream distributions. And we actually have a few laptops running it here. There's one down here which is running on the Fedora Beta. You can have a quick play on if you want to come down.
Have you got anything involving Project Utopia here? Robert Love's project? Are you familiar with that?
I'm afraid not, no.
I didn't. Well, it's a bit on the kind of the heels at the moment. It's not necessarily a big mainstream thing at the moment, so that's not a problem. But yeah, I think we're going to have to check out some of these laptops. And
yeah,
thank you for your input.
Thank you very much, Maria. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you.
Right, we're here in the .org village still, and we've got Caroline Yates, who's from BBC Technology, but also from LinuxChicks.org. Can you tell us what that is?
It's basically it's an international organization for encouraging women to use Linux and for helping them stay using Linux once they get into it. There's various levels of users, from newbies to experienced kernel hackers. We've got technical authors who are writing for O'Reilly, and loads of authors who do regular features and articles on different aspects of Linux and open source software.
Cool. So what sort of things are you doing to try and encourage women to use Linux and to stay using Linux?
Well, for a lot of women, if they're, say, a student, then they're going to be one or two people in their class that are women. So they don't have a peer group or they don't have mentors. So we can be there to give them support and tell them that they're not on their own, that they're not stupid, they can do it, and they just get on with it, and it seems to work.
Can I just ask, I mean, the stereotypical sort of idea of Linux is, you know, men with beards who don't wash very often.
like Ack.
Yeah, like Ack.
You're standing conceivably in front of three of them.
Why?
Occasionally.
Is that the reason why there's a need for an organisation such as Linux Chicks?
I think that's a bit hard on a lot of Linux users and Linux developers.
We appreciate these things, thank you.
That's very stereotypical, and you have to get past that and think, no, it's for everyone, and, you know, who cares whether you've got a beard and sandals or whether you've got, you know, some breasts and other female things.
Can I just ask, though, why people should actually care about Linux? Why is it something that needs to be promoted?
Well, it's just...
Standing here at the Linux Expo, Matt.
I know, it's a leading question.
I think for a lot of people, you don't want to be using proprietary software. You don't want to be having to pay constantly just to use your computer. You want to be able to have control. You want to be able to, you know, if there's a problem with software, go ahead, fix it yourself, or learn how to code, learn how to improve things, and then contribute to all the open source communities and, you know, get involved.
Great, thanks very much.
Thanks very much indeed. Thanks.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free.
Okay, here we are at the AbbeyWord booth, which is in the .org area of the expo. And I've got Hubert Figuero. So how do you pronounce that?
Hubert Figuero.
Like that. Okay, nice one.
It's really French.
Proper French. Nice one. And what... Right, okay. Shut up.
Proper French, thanks a lot.
Proper French. Excuse my English. Okay, what do you do with AbbeyWord?
I am one of the main developers of AbbeyWord. I'm mostly working on the macOS port, because starting with the upcoming 2.2 version, AbbeyWord will be available on macOS 10 as well as on Unix and Windows platforms.
Do you see that there's an actual point for AbbeyWord now OpenOffice is available and OpenOffice Writer is seeming so compelling? What has AbbeyWord got to offer that OpenOffice doesn't give us?
AbbeyWord is much lighter when it comes to system resources. I can run AbbeyWord decently on three-year-old machines like this one. AbbeyWord also runs quite natively on every platform. For example, on Windows, it looks like a real Windows application, unlike OpenOffice.
Right.
And on GNOME, it's well integrated. That's why AbbeyWord is part of GNOME Office now.
Right. In terms of the GNOME Office, it just seems to me like it's just a bunch of separate programs. How is it conformed to an office?
GNOME Office is just currently it's a meta project, so the idea is to just group a bunch of Office applications together, and in the long term we want to provide infrastructure for these applications, like providing common widget libraries for Office specific tasks.
Right.
We currently have a few libraries like libgst that is used to open office files or open office files even, because we provide zip archive and OLI 2 storage within libgst.
And I mean, in terms of, obviously the big question is Microsoft Office compatibility, things such as macros and all the rest of it. How does Abbey Word fare with Microsoft Word?
Abbey Word tries to open everything it can from the Microsoft Word document. Surely it drops macros and everything that is VB related, because we don't have anything like that. But for the rest, we try to do our best. The problem with Microsoft Word is that it's really complex, and object embedding can be really, really daunting. Even within Microsoft Office, it's hard to catch up with object embedding. So we will try to do our best to be as compatible as possible.
Are you finding that you can get a lot of code reuse from places like OpenOffice or KOffice, whatever? You talked about libgst.
The problem with OpenOffice is that it's a big platform as itself. So reusing code from
just
OpenOffice
a bit, yeah.
is basically bringing OpenOffice into our code, which is not what we want. So sometimes we get help from the OpenOffice code, like for the file format import, because we support OpenOffice files as well as the old StarOffice files. On the other side, for Word import, for example, they hired the original author of the Word library we use.
Did they? Cool.
So we have the original, and OpenOffice has the author.
That's all. Oh, superb. I didn't know that. Cool.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for your help.
No, thanks for
all of us with Abbey Word. We're very impressed with it, certainly.
Yep. Hello, okay, in a pathetic attempt to pander to our listeners, we are here talking to Schwuck, possibly our first listener, and certainly our most active first listener.
Hello, Schwuck. How are you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How far have you come today to be here at the glorious Kensington Olympia?
About 300 or 400 miles, I'm not sure.
Now, that's dedication, isn't it?
A long way down. Took us. We set up about 1 o'clock this morning, and we got down here for 7.
Why? Why did you leave? Why did you want to get here for 1 o'clock?
No.
Sorry, 7 o'clock, sorry.
Because it was a sleeper.
Oh, right. Well, you make it sound like you're doing something really hard there, but you're just sleeping all the way.
So you just got on a train and then went to sleep?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what have you seen so far?
After we kicked someone who was sleeping on our chairs off, anyway.
Yeah. What have you seen so far that you've been interested in?
Not a hell of a lot, really.
No, this really fit redhead girl who just went into the cafeteria.
Yeah, I did see that.
Hello.
I'm the booth babes wandering around.
The what?
The booth babes. Did you not see them? The two blondes?
Yeah, we did notice that they were trying to appeal to the majority of men here by getting us to buy hosting by having overly inflated breasts, which was interesting.
I've got some hosting. It's really great.
Hosting.
Mm. Oh, right. Hoeing.
So, what are you going to take back to Cumbria then as a memory of the Expo 2004?
Hopefully some beer tonight.
That'd be good. Cool. Cheers. Cheers, Schwuck.
Oh. Where are you going for beer tonight?
Where are we going?
Yeah.
We're following you lot.
Nice one. Well, I'm going to the awards, but...
Oh, well, you are.
Unfortunately.
Up in your suit.
Yeah, shut up. Yeah, I'm going to look hardcore, basically. But, yeah, are you going to come and have some beers with us?
Oh, yes.
Nice one. Well, I'm going to be...
After we finished laughing at you doing your speech.
Bastards. You see, fuck off. Just scale us, we don't need you.
I'll tell you one thing I did see I liked. Looking Glass. Did you do the demo of Looking Glass on the Sun?
Ah, this is how apt. I mentioned this in my talk. Looking Glass, have they got it here?
Yeah, there's a live demo running upstairs. You
can really? Nice.
Don't fucking encourage him.
Right, we're going to go and look at Looking
Glass.
KDE. Probably is, to be.
I'm still going to get blamed for that.
I know you are. Yeah. Let rip, forum people. Right. I don't know why I'm holding the mic. I just wandered over here to watch you guys.
Écoutez le radio et utilisez Abbey Word.
Oh. Here we are. We're talking to Hugo Mills, who's chairman of Hans Lug. Hugo, how are you finding the expo?
It's pretty interesting. I've had some good conversations with people, so yeah.
Question is, Hugo, what's the secret of your success in really looking like Linus Torvalds?
We have pictures to show on the Lug Radio website.
Nice one.
Can I refuse to answer on the grounds it may incriminate me?
What, you took his skin off?
I'm saying nothing.
I was just wondering, a slightly different question. What do you expect to get from a Linux User and Developer Expo?
Just talking to lots of interesting people, which I seem to be achieving.
So we're
glad we could help.
what's interesting in your book? What sort of things do you think are cool that you've seen here today?
I've had some good conversations with some of the embedded people.
Yeah.
Embedded people.
Well, yeah.
What were they embedded in?
Mostly Linux, I think.
Oh, cheers, Hugo. Anything else you want to say to the great unwashed?
Go and have a bath.
Cheers.
Cheers, thanks very much, Sean. Right, so we're on, yeah? Right,
we're on.
Okay, we're sitting here in the cafeteria at the Linux Expo with Digito.
Hello, Digito.
How's it going?
How's it going, Digito?
Not bad, mate.
Are you enjoying the expo?
So far so good, especially Rackspace girls. Oh my god.
You like the Rackspace? Yes. I've observed the aforementioned females, and I approve.
Yes.
What do you think, Ak?
I think they're heavily breasted, from what I've seen of them. and fantastic.
Yeah, we need to go and see them again, actually.
Definitely,
yep. You what? What did Matt say? Matt said, I prefer men, was it?
I said I get bigger at home.
Oh, right. I bet you do.
And I'll tell you what, having seen Lynn, he is not wrong.
I bet she's going to love hearing that.
Do you think she listens to the program? Not anymore, she doesn't. And neither do you.
when you've gone to sleep, Matt sticks the grade on to hear my voice.
Matt presses pause.
Yeah, dog pause. Pause, dog. I just thought I'd make some bestiality joke.
Right, we have just seen Jono's talk.
Yeah.
Jono's presentation. We will have shots of it and the presentation itself available on the Lug Radio website, assuming we get around to it.
Yes.
And it was actually surprisingly good, I thought.
Thank you.
Despite the fact that Jono was doing it, I actually thought it was surprisingly good.
What? Despite the fact that I was doing, what's that supposed to mean, you ginger bastard?
Well, if I'd seen someone, no, this is a compliment.
My God, yeah. Axe shirt matches the wall behind
me. I'm a chameleon.
Hang on, I'm going to take a picture of this. Yeah, we'll do it in a bit. Okay, yeah.
I had a point there, and I forgot what it was. Oh yeah. The thing was, I mean, I was expecting if I'd have seen that talk from someone else, I'd have thought, yeah, that was quite a good talk. But it's relatively weird to watch someone you know doing a talk.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, no, hang on, because I'd already argue with Jono about this kind of thing. Whereas I'm not going to argue with Jeremy Allison, because he's Jeremy Allison, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a famous friend. Right, those the rest of you who saw Jono's talk, what did you think of it?
I think it was very well done. And I can't think of anything else to say about it. But it was good.
Non-specific damning with faint praise there
but
from
no,
Aquarian.
I agree with what you said about Looking Glass, because I think Looking Glass is a very good thing.
Oh, it's wank.
It is not wank.
It's wank.
It's
pointless eye candy wank. It just is.
Why don't you put that to the man from Sun later that we're going to be interviewing?
I did. I told him it was Movios. Oh, that man.
We're
going to
be interviewing someone later, a guy called Paul, I think, from Sun. So,
yeah,
so
I'm going to say, okay, so in order to practice with this, I'm basically going to say, yeah, your thing, right, it's wank. It's pointless. I can't do anything useful with it, and I'm not even going to be able to use it anyway because you're going to sell it to people. So what are you here at the expo for?
Because
I might, you know, phrase it a bit more diplomatically, but that's basically going to be the thrust of my questioning.
No, but what the guy that we spoke to earlier off air was saying was that basically they may well release it in a similar way as they have OpenOffice. So you'll have OpenOffice, which the equivalent of OpenOffice, which is the open source freely available version. And then they'll make money out of the Star Office equivalent.
I would like to believe that was the case. I think the guy we spoke doesn't think they're releasing it open source at all. And then when Jono said, I read it on your website that you are, he went, oh, shit, maybe we can do a Star Office thing with it then.
Yeah,
which is what it sounded like to me. It sounded to me like, I got hippie scumbags. You're not going to have any of our cool code. Get lost, you commies. Is what it sounded like to me.
Let's face it, Star Office wouldn't exist as it is now without the Open Office development team. So.
Yeah, it wouldn't exist without Star Division of the people who actually wrote it before Stan bought it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Sun did get rid of the open desktop, horrible, crappy thing of Doom.
Well, yeah, you know, it was this whole kind of, you know, use Star Office and nothing else deal, and
yeah,
that was toss, I admit.
If they hadn't got rid of that, then everyone on Earth would have laughed at them for a very long time.
Everyone would have done exactly what they did do, which is to say, this is complete wank, and that's it. John is taking pictures of me because my shirt matches the wall.
Digito, have you seen Project Looking Glass?
Project Looking Glass? Yeah. No, I haven't had the chance yet to get there. I did have with a Bitrock guy, quite interesting, Spanish geezer. Had some points about it, especially about IBM, how much it's pushing the open source world, probably not in the right way. That'd be something to talk about later. Run you through it in a little while.
Some guy from Bitrock's doing a talk later, but I can't remember what on.
I can tell him what Bitrock is. I haven't got
no,
a clue.
I can't. No,
go on, Digito.
Bitrock is. I don't know, some installer that makes it easy for you to, to compile a little program so you can put it like Windows-type installers on open source, with open source. The good thing about it is it's supposed to be cross-platform and really easy to use, so you can just grab your stuff, chuck it in there with a nice little GUI, and there you go.
So, Debs. This is what Debs are for, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but simple, nice little, you know, just drag and drop.
Yeah. To be fair, Debian packages are a pain in the ass to install, particularly if they kind of mess up and a particular file can't be overwritten. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say that apt-get is a piece of piss to you, and it is. Aptitude.
Synaptic.
The
thing is, though, that people coming from the Windows world or maybe the OS X world will expect to have an installer which they stick a CD in the drive with a bit of software.
Yeah.
And they expect to see a nice little wizard come up that says, oh, do this, shall I install this here, shall I do this, do you want to install these bits? And then it's done. Whereas with a Deb, it's a whole different, to use a word that you liked in your speech, paradigm.
Yeah.
You've got a whole different...
I know what paradigm is.
You've got it's a whole different way, isn't it?
It is the time elephant, yes.
What the hell does that mean? Explain that.
Yeah, Aquarian. Explain what a paradigm is and why it's the type of elephant.
Well, that was kind of the joke, yeah, but it's a thing.
Okay, so
insight.
It's a joke to do with the word pachyderm, okay.
Yeah, I thought you were a wise guy. I was wrong.
So, Jonah, going back to this, I mean, I'd say that the reason that people are interested in having an installer like the Bitrock thing is simply because that's what people are used to. And apt-get is all about having an internet-connected system all the time. And people don't necessarily have an internet-connected system all the time. I mean, do you got any thoughts on that, Dan?
Yeah, I think that this is like a cross-platform install shield, if I'm getting this correctly. I mean, it's... The way that things are actually done in Linux, you got all sorts of dependencies. What are they talking about? Putting all of these dependencies on one disk? I mean, this doesn't seem to work.
Looking at this, Bitrock, who are the company who are talking about doing this, they are doing a presentation this afternoon at 4:25 called Introduction to Mod Mono ASP.NET on Linux.
That's the other thing they do. That's what they're doing. They're doing I knew I'd heard them from somewhere, and it wasn't to do with installers. They're doing Mono. Which is, isn't it?
I thought it was Zimian that were doing the Mono stuff.
I think they were incorporated into Zimian, weren't they, or something?
Yeah, lots of people are doing different Mono-ish bits. I mean, Mod Mono, I think specifically here, is a plugin for Apache, so you can do ASP.NET, rather than sort of generically the Mono implementing the common language runtime and everything that makes .NET what it is.
Radio. Right, we're back in the kind of cafe area, and we agreed to have a bit of a meet-up today here at the Expo with some of the faithful Lug Radio people. And, I think it's only fair that I pass the mic on so that they can all introduce themselves and say hello. I know this is going to sound weird, but can I pull this out of your bag a bit further? Right, okay. Ooh. Take it away, Digito.
Rightio, again I'll introduce myself, I'm Digito, glad to be here at this lovely expo, which seems to be somewhat, not quite what I expected, but hey,
Lug Radio team is here. Nice people, having fun. Introduce you now to Shrek. Shrek. Okay, there you go.
Shwuk, the name no one can pronounce.
Where's it from? Tell us where it's from first.
I heard it once on a bus.
Really? Simple as that?
The noise when the door closes.
Ah. And or the Starship Enterprise's bridge.
I just wanted a nickname years ago, but nobody was going to... Nobody else is using, because all the decent names are gone. And
yeah, all decent girls have gone. Yeah.
Picked a name, no one's ever used it, and no one's used it since, so...
So how are you doing since we spoke to you about an hour ago?
Very, very tired.
You what?
We'd have, like, cut it. So, you know, we were doing this bit first and then that bit later.
I seem to have the shortest earphones in the world and I'm kind of getting dragged towards the miniest recorder. Yeah, cheers.
And we'll pass it on to the next one.
Okay.
I'm Muslim. And I came to see Sparks today, but he's not here, so...
Damn.
So do the short story, you three.
So what have you thought about the expo so far? I mean, anything exciting happening there?
It's on two floors. It's a bit nasty. It was on one floor. Red Hat's here. Went here last year, so that's a good thing. But yeah, so same old, really. It's good.
Okay, here we are at the... Linux Expo, and we are on the Sun stand, and we've got two chaps here from Sun. Would you like to just sort of introduce yourselves first?
I'm Paul Leonard. I'm the software product marketing manager for Sun UK.
Adrian Keward, pre-sales manager for Sun Software.
Right, excellent. I mean, the main reason why I wanted to talk to you guys was there seems to be two contrasting products that are in the pipeline for Sun. You've got the Sun Java desktop, and then of course we've got Project Looking Glass, which you've been looking at over there, which seems to be in development. Do you guys hope to sort of move entirely to Project Looking Glass at the moment, or is the plan to kind of see how the water goes with it?
Project Looking Glass currently was a technology innovation, a demonstration piece of software that we put together 6 months ago, took out to the market just to see what sort of response we got from the public. The interest has been high, so we're looking to actually productize it and may bring it out as part of JDS at a future time. But it was really to show the sort of technologies that Sun are working on in the lab currently. And it's surprised us actually at the amount of interest that's been about for Project Looking Glass, and it's actually speeded up our development process somewhat.
So, I mean, regarding Project Looking Glass, do you... One thing that I saw on the website, I was reading through the details of it, was that I read that the project was going to be made available for Linux and Windows, and I thought I read something about it being available as open source. Is that the case, or is it likely to be closed source?
The technology preview is obviously what we can comment at the moment. The software development kit will be available in the next few months, so people will be able to evaluate, to try it out, hopefully to develop new applications to the 3D interface. From that point of view, we'll be able to comment really on the licensing, but I would expect us to manage the same way the Looking Glass project, the same way we do the Java process itself.
Right, but do you feel that if you are trying to obviously approach the Linux community and sell products to using the whole sort of Linux philosophy of everything being open, and you're selling products around this kind of philosophy, do you think that you need to kind of follow the route of open sourcing software to make it viable, to make Sun viable as a Linux player?
We'll follow the source as accurately we can, or you know, the community process. But there are some areas that we need to maintain our own, not necessarily licensing point of view, but we need to be able to maintain our own, I'll try and think of a better way to describe it. We need to protect our own sort of code base. And when we're actually in a position where we've got the product in a status where we can actually open it up, I think we'll actually try and follow the community process a lot closer. But for the moment, until we've actually got a product which is stable enough, closed enough, that we know that we can start evaluating whether or not we should sell it. Should we give it away? Should we sell it? It's still something we still haven't decided.
But sorry, do you want to say something?
What I was going to say was perhaps a more fundamental problem with the whole idea of a 3D interface is that I'm not going to deny it looks as cool as hell. But I've not seen anyone ever come up with a reasonable use for it that you couldn't do just as easily on a 2D desktop. So I'm not clear what it does other than, you know, looking like something out of a film to make it a compelling user interface.
We're still trying to figure out what people will use it for. Realistically here, we've got a number of applications. Most of them are 2D. So you look at Mozilla, you look at Star Office. They're 2D applications on top of a 3D app, so you can turn it over, you can look behind it. But what are people going to use it for? The first generation of 3D applications are probably going to be something we're waiting to see. And it could be, say, geostrata data. So you're actually going to turn an application around, look to see what's inside the strata itself, maybe oil bearing, that sort of environment. We think about other 3D applications. Well, okay, so we can show you a 3D CD player, just the idea of you can spool through, that's where my CD is, I'm going to play that. So they're very simple examples, but we're looking to find almost that killer app. Why should someone use this interface as opposed to a 20-year-old desktop paradigm that, well, let's face it, it looks pretty boring. You can, of course, do things with GNOME. You can do things with KDE. You can have different faces. You can spread your applications around, but they're boring. Let's find some way to find a killer application. So that's why we'll bring out the SDK first, and let's see what people can do with it.
Right, so you're thinking more in terms of delivering an infrastructure on which other people could build.
Absolutely.
A potential killer app, rather than actually looking to develop the killer app yourself, and then that'll sell people
yes,
on the technology.
That's what we want to do. We want to partner with people to say, let's bring forward, let's find those applications, and let's go and find a way to market them.
Okay.
One thing I was going to ask is, it sounds very much like Sun is shifting its focus predominantly from a business infrastructure to a consumer level infrastructure. Are you trying to sort of target the same kind of people that Linux distributions such as Mandrake and people such as Microsoft are trying to target? Are you going for the home user who wants a simple-to-use operating system?
Just to cover that off, I mean, really, Sun's current strategy around the markets that we want to address is we have a broad range of products. Some of those products appeal specifically to a business community. Some of the products, such as Star Office, have taken off in the same way as OpenOffice has to a wide range of organisations. Sun likes to take those products to as wide a market as possible. Star Office has taken us into the consumer market more than we'd been there previously, and we hope to continue to actually build on that interest with JDS. But it's not us switching a focus away from our traditional markets. It's actually building some new markets with us, with some existing technology that we have, that we've just not actually addressed those markets properly before. So
it seems very much to me, though, when I look around this sort of stand, as I mean, I'm a journalist, and I've been interested in the position with Sun, because Sun seems to be becoming very much more of a Linux player. It seems as if there's a kind of unsurety of focus with Sun. From one perspective, you see Sun as being an enterprise-class provider, but then you sort of see Sun dipping their feet in the water at the consumer model, but not really devoting themselves to it. Do you think that you can kind of actually approach that market if you're not going to kind of put the boot in and really make an effort to kind of go the full hog with it?
I think with the consumer market, for us, we're going to attack it with specific products that specifically fit within that market. We won't try offering inappropriate products into that market. What I would say is I think we've got a little bit more of a laser-like focus as to which types of products fit in which particular markets now. So we're not taking the approach that a data center server is going to fit everybody's needs. We have a wide range of software products. We have a wide range of hardware products. And for us, different products fit in different markets. And we've got to make sure that Sun can actually differentiate itself in those markets with the products that it offers. So we like to, especially with something like the Java desktop system, offer differentiated, supported solution based on Linux into a market which is looking to move to an alternative desktop, but isn't necessarily at a business level prepared to actually take that risk. So we're prepared to actually take that risk away from a customer.
But as I walk around this expo and I look at these different people, I've looked at the Red Hat people, and I've looked at IBM, and I've looked at Sun.
imagine for a second that I, you know, I'm your typical kind of customer. I'm someone who's looking to do something, and I don't know a lot about Linux. I don't know a lot about this whole sort of operating system and this subculture and everything. What does Sun offer with this Sun Java Desktop that another distribution does not offer? This seems to me, from a critical kind of cynic standpoint, that there isn't actually anything in there that's unique enough to make me want to go with it, that another kind of distribution doesn't offer. You know, there doesn't seem to be a real kind of selling point to go over than the fact that it's kind of a rebranded GNOME. What does Sun offer that's actually unique to that product?
Well, one of the things I'd think we'd start off with saying is, if you actually look at the components together, out of the box, they work. You don't spend 20 minutes, half an hour, 3 days configuring, you know, the base kernel, the base core to actually work together. Everything works. It works stably. It works out of the box with all the device drivers. You know, Evolution works. Mozilla works. We've done what we think is the best thing. We've made the best platform possible to run Java. So the JRE, you know, the latest versions, fully supported. You type in Java. You don't have to figure out where the paths are. It's all done for you. And that's something that an actual end user, someone who's used to using Microsoft, is used to using. You know, not necessarily Java, but they're used to just typing in something or just clicking on an application and it works. Not having to reconfigure. So,
I mean, I noticed there you, two key statements. You mentioned something that just works and something that is there to run Java properly. So it seems very much the focus is on Java itself. Do you think you may be locking out part of the market by just focusing on Java, express Java support, because this operating system is all based around running applications that are running in a language that's developed primarily by Sun? Or do you feel that it's there as a more generic kind of distribution? I mean, you mentioned everything just works, but surely that every product should have that functionality.
Well, I would agree. Every product should have that. But, I mean, if you look at a lot of the distributions you pick up, either you download them or you pull them off a magazine, you have to do so much to actually get everything to work. You click on a document, does it actually bring up OpenOffice? Does it actually bring up StarOffice? Those things do take time, and a lot of people need to actually understand that these aren't just things that just work out of the box. You've got the components. If you know how to do it, you can do it. But not everyone is so technically capable of doing it. So we're targeting almost at a level of user which at the moment is just using Windows. And they don't know how it got to their PC. They don't know how to change it, how to fix it. They just want to be able to use one application, two applications, and off they go. We want to provide the same functionality, but obviously with the advantages of Linux, which also gives them to say, okay, fine, it's the best place to run Java, but what if I've got this application? It might be Fat Client for Oracle. It could be I want to use Terminal Server or something. I've got to be able to use that because that's what my enterprise applications technologies need. So, yes, we run, we drive, we push Java, but it works with everything else.
Lug Radio, 8 out of 10 penguins at bear owners preferred it.
Right, we're here in the Org Village on the second day of the Linux User and Developer Expo.
We are indeed.
In London, and we've got Alex Hudson from the AFFS. Sorry, AFFS, which is the Association for something or other. Can you tell us what it is? Because we don't know what it is.
It's the Association for Free Software, the AFFS, and we're
right.
The UK Associate Organisation of the Free Software Foundation Europe, and hopefully everybody knows who the Free Software Foundation are.
Sure. So can you tell us a little bit more about exactly what the purpose of your organisation is?
Threefold, really. We're a membership organisation, so we're trying to get our members involved and active in free software, both using and developing free software. We try and make information available to organisations like government, like particularly the public sector bodies, education, health, to try and make them aware of free software. Work with organisations already in those sectors working with people. If you have organisations like OSWatch who are working in education, so we try and sort of grease the wheels of communication between the various organisations. Then we also try and tell people about the various sort of laws and things that are coming up in Europe. So again, we're interested in software patents, we're interested in EUCD, we're interested in a lot of the sort of DRM related laws and that kind of thing, to try and make people aware of where their data is going and whether or not they'll be able to get it back when it's gone there.
Right, okay. So what can you give us specifics of some of the things you're actually doing at the moment?
Okay, for example, one of the campaigns we're currently working on is software patents, and we're doing that with the FFII to try and make people aware of the software patent law that has been proposed by Parliament, gone through by Parliament, and is now trying to be altered by the Council of Europe and the
right.
various member states, because the law that's been passed, or the law that's going through at the moment, looks quite good. And the law that they're wanting to actually change it to doesn't look very good. And so for the sake of free software users and developers, we're trying to make people aware of that. one of the more interesting things that we're trying to do in the UK at the moment is also we have this round of funding available for free software projects. So we're trying to get people who have sort of innovative free software project ideas, and maybe they need money for hardware, they want to buy a specification to write something or something like that. We now have money available to be able to fund people to write free software for sort of anything which is novel or interesting or wouldn't otherwise get money.
Right. Going back to software patents,
sure.
What's the problem?
The big problem with software patents is basically that software is just maths. I mean, maths is algorithms, it's all sorts of things. It's not just sort of 2 + 2 on bits of paper. And if you allow software patents, what that opens the door to, as well as patents on software, it means patents on methods, patents on business methods, patents on algorithms, ways of doing things. And these are all basically things that you shouldn't be able to patent because, you know, if you have a method of doing something, if you have an algorithm, a way of calculating something, there's something universal about it. It's something you discover rather than invent. And the whole, you know, when you're writing software, it's you have ideas and things and you have to code it up. But there's nothing really truly inventive in the real word going on there.
A quick question regarding the AFFS. I mean, something I've had an interest in this organisation for a while. You mentioned you're quite closely linked with the Free Software Foundation, which is obviously the archetypal, the big boys of this kind of thing. Why do you feel the need to call yourself the AFFS? Why don't you just call yourselves the Free Software Foundation?
Because we don't want to confuse people, for a start, because we're not the Free Software Foundation. If you want to join the Free Software Foundation, there's this kind of associate membership scheme, but you're not really a member of the Free Software Foundation. AFFS, on the other hand, is basically an organization made up of its members. The members elect a committee every year, and that committee runs the organization. But effectively, we're our members. It's a membership organization run by the members for the members of free software in general.
The one thing that I find difficult, I mean, I'm here and I'm sitting in the .org village and you've got a poster with Richard Stallman pointing out saying free software wants you. Do you think this is the right kind of image to be portraying as a professional organization dedicated for furthering free software?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you think a yellow poster with Richard Stallman pointing in your general direction, you really think that that's kind of the right way forward?
It depends who you want to target, right? We don't... .org, all the people that you have around, they're not businesses, they're not tend to be people who are commercially interested in free software necessarily. A lot of the people who are coming along are basically people who are involved in the various projects that are here, people who are interested in free software and they use it at home and that kind of thing. The audience that we're targeting here are really the users and developers of free software at a kind of grassroots level. Now, for example, if we go to the Parliamentary IT Committee, who are a body who meet in Westminster, then obviously we go along in our suits, with information that's aimed at businesses and aimed at showing people why free software is important from the point of view of why you should run it as a business or why you should support it as a non-profit organisation or why you should use it in the public sector. And it's all about aiming the information because traditionally, you know, if you're a free software organisation, you've really only been aimed at hackers. You've been aimed at the people who are writing software. At this show, we want to aim at, obviously, the hackers, because the hackers are very important writing the software. We also want to aim at the users, people who are potential users and people who are potential hackers. And then other places, we obviously aim at different people. We aim at business people. We aim at people in government. We aim at the public sector.
Regarding the activities of the AFFS, I'm a Linux journalist, and I'm involved in this kind of... I've been involved in this kind of community for a while, and I take part in a lot of advocacy, as do the other members of Lug Radio. From what I can see is, if I was to be a hard-nosed cynic, I don't actually see the AFS doing anything. Sure. I don't see anything pragmatic happening. I don't see free software being benefited. Why? What am I going to get for my £10? I mean, what are you going to do for our community that's pragmatic and real?
For a user, for a member of the organisation, the £10 is basically a fee for joining, which is like it's almost like a token thing, but also it allows you to come to our conference. And these are services we provide for our members. The services we provide for our members are different from the activities that we try to do in terms of promotion of free software. One of the things we try not to do is to basically preach to the choir, because obviously there's lots of people who know about free software. When you're around in the .org, you're not saying, you know, oh, this is new free software, let me tell you all about it, because most people here actually know about free software already. So what we want to do is we want to go to people who don't know about free software. So we want to talk to, MPs in Parliament. We want to talk to the guys who are... trying to get the health service interested in free software. And these are people who are traditionally not part of our community. So what we're trying to do is bring people from outside of our community into the community, and those are the people that we try to target with our campaigns, with speeches, and we try to go and talk to them rather than actually talk to the people already involved.
But what are you sufficiently doing that Open Forum Europe and Open Advantage and all of these countless other schemes that are very similar, what are you actually bringing in? Anything? What's new that, with the AFFS?
Well, Open Forum Europe, for example, are a very pragmatic organisation in terms of they're not particularly pro free software, for example. They see open source, in inverted commas, as like a very cost-effective platform for running business applications.
Right.
That's not what we're about. We're about providing freedom for users, you know, telling people about the freedoms of free software. And the one of the things we're trying to do is basically take all of these groups who are sort of working desperately and trying to get them to communicate. And that's one of the things that we've been reasonably successful in doing. So
you basically outlaw business then? Are you targeting people as opposed to business?
No, absolutely not. But we're trying to be a very cohesive and very inclusive organization. We're trying to talk to all sorts of people because there are lots of people doing very good work. For example, on software patents, you have the FFII who are doing an incredible amount of work on software patents in Europe. There's no point us trying to replicate that work or trying to do the work on our own instead of working with them. And in other areas, it's true in other ways. You have OSWatch, who are working in education. They're
right.
doing a lot of work with FEHE that we shouldn't be trying to compete with or replicate. We should be working with them and getting them to talk to the other people who are in other public sector areas and
right.
basically making people talk to each other and work together. And, you know, we kind of see ourselves as like a way of greasing the wheels of lubrication. You know, we're trying to make
right.
it all run a bit smoother. And
well, one criticism I've heard of the AFFS, and I'd be interested in your response to this, is that it's filled with zealots.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that?
I don't really understand what a zealot could be. There's various types of zealots that you obviously get called. You get called a licensing zealot or a free software zealot or a this zealot or a that zealot. Our members are a very diverse bunch of people. And
right.
they're the ones who effectively run the organization at the end of the day because via their commitment to the organization and voting, they're the ones who sort of elect the committee. There is always a kind of tension between free software and proprietary software developers,
yeah.
and we do get a lot of criticism from them who expect us to provide a business model for producing software, and that's not really what we're about. What we're saying is free software is better generally, and what we're interested in is trying to find out ways of helping people to produce free software rather
right.
than saying, you know, here's this other business model that you should be doing instead. It's a sort of different a way of approaching the subject.
Are you conscious to not portray a zealousy kind of image?
Absolutely.
I mean, this criticism I've heard is from various parts of the Linux community, and it may be fair, it may be unfair. To be honest, I don't know a lot about the AFFS.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, are you interested in portraying a more reasonable
Absolutely.
Image, or do you want to portray
a
hardline image?
I think in a lot of ways we have managed to do that, because I know one of the things that does happen is when we talk to people who haven't come across maybe many people in the free software community before, once you actually talk to us and you find out we're actually quite nice, cuddly people. And
yeah.
You know,
with a Big Muff t-shirt.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
The thing is, people read a lot of stuff about free software and about the GPL. I mean, you get people calling their GPL cancer, and there's all sorts of
yeah.
fear, uncertainty, and doubt and stuff. And a lot of that does reflect badly on the community and often on free software organizations. And that's one of the things that we have to dispel. We have to show people that we're not anti-business. You know, we're not anti-commercial software. We're anti-proprietary software. And
right.
there's a difference between the two. We like people who go out and sell software, because people who sell software fund programmers and write software. And, you know, writing software is obviously a great thing and something we want to encourage.
Fantastic. And one final question from me. I don't know if the other guys are going to ask anything, but one final question for me is, what are the plans for 2004? I mean, what are you going to do to probably dispel the myth that you're just a discussion forum as opposed to a pragmatic advocacy organization?
Well,
what are you going to do that we're going to see?
In a lot of ways, we're going to have to continue to be a discussion forum, because a lot of the things that we're trying to do are communication-based, getting people to talk to each other.
Right, yeah.
In
yeah.
terms of the practical stuff that we're trying to do, as I mentioned earlier, we have this scheme whereby we want to fund free software projects. So one thing I'd love to see is lots of people with great ideas for bits of free software that they need help with financially to
yeah.
come to us and say, you know, we need this graphics card, because we could write a driver for it, but we don't have the money to buy it. But it would be really good, because it would be the best graphics card driver in the free software market.
Right.
That's the thing. We say, well, you know, here's
here's the money, go do it.
Great.
These are things which are going to make a real difference to our community. And obviously we have to keep pushing our members and people who aren't members to write to their politicians and people involved in the kind of law. Law's boring, law is dull, but it affects everybody who writes software, and people need to know about it and they need to do stuff about it. Because, you know, it's only going to take a few people. FFII have made a huge difference with only a few hundred people going out and demonstrating. And it doesn't take a huge number of people to make the difference that we need. And that difference is going to be hugely important over the next few years for people who write software and use software.
Fantastic. Well, Alex, you've been an absolute star to talk to. I'd like to thank you for your interview here today. And all the best with the AFFS. We wish you all the best in the future. We hope that you advocate free software in every form possible.
Thank you very much, Johnny.
Cheers, then.